Hi, and welcome to Coffee and Classic Movies by
Joshua
and Korea. We're husband and wife, and we love to brew and enjoy some coffee
and some awesome movies
and talk about them. So we hope you enjoy today's episode.
Enjoy.
So call us crazy, but it is so hot here in Richmond, Virginia, and we are drinking some hot coffee.
Well, I'm Joshua.
And I'm Korea. And thanks for tuning in to Coffee and Classic Movies. We're back. We didn't forget about y'all. Hopefully you didn't forget about us.
Yeah, we had Easter weekend, and then we also had Avengers weekend the following week. So we were kind of pre-consumed with some stuff that we were doing as a family. Could we have recorded earlier in the week? Probably yes. But we decided to take a whole week, 2 weeks off. And jump back into it because it gave some time. We had a lot of stuff going on, so we're happy to be back.
Yeah, so of course we have another great cup of coffee.
Of course we have a great cup of coffee.
And like, you know how we like to talk about what's in our cup.
So if you didn't know what we like to do here, we like to drink coffee when we're watching movies because, well,
it's delicious.
Anybody can just eat popcorn, but it takes the real person to drink some coffee when they're watching a film. And not just any film, a classic film. And then classic could be any that stands the test of time. So, I mean, we can
doesn't have to be a 100-year-old movie. I mean, it's just a plain good, well-made movie that, like, stands out.
Stands out against the rest.
Yeah, it also helps us keep, it helps keep, if I can talk, that would be great. It helps to keep us awake because we have a young family, and sometimes the only time we get to record is kind of late.
Late in the evening time.
So that's another crazy thing. We drink coffee at night.
Well, tonight, coffee is an interesting one. And this is not something that you will go to your store and you automatically look for when you're picking out a cup of coffee, because this is actually a decaf blend. The only decaf blend that I know of that Blanchard's makes. Blanchard's Coffee makes. Mm-hmm. It's their Swiss Water Decaf Brazil Primavera. Ooh, that sounds good on Primavera.
Yeah.
It has a cereal taste to it, a little baker's chocolate, and a little touch of sea salt.
This would be good.
Because this is the first time you're tasting it.
Yeah, so this would be perfect at, like, breakfast time.
Breakfast time.
Especially you mentioning the cereal part.
What do you think?
It kind of reminds me.
I mean, what do you think? It's pretty smooth.
It's smooth. It's light.
It's
smooth and light.
This is the first time I ever went to a store and got decaf coffee.
Yeah. Did you have more water in this?
No, this is how it is.
Oh, okay.
It's light. It's a very light tasting coffee.
So I was right. It's light.
And it's really good. I have mine mixed. If you didn't know, I like to do hazelnut creamer.
And I did original.
Yeah, you
or just regular, non-flavored creamer.
Non-flavored creamer. And to me, I just love it. I love when the coffee is really good, it brings out the notes of hazelnut. And I love the notes of hazelnut really well. It's very good. If you don't live in the Richmond, Virginia area, you can go to blanchardscoffee.com and get yourself a roast, a bag of it, and they'll ship it right to you. If you live in Richmond, you can go to Kroger, Publix, I think Wegmans.
Did you say online?
Yes, online. Okay. And then if you're bold enough and brave enough, which I encourage you to be, you can go down to the roasting off of Westwood. Now, they're getting ready to open up two new locations. You can pick up some blends yourself. That's what we have done before, is went down there. And they also do coffee making classes, which is really cool. Fancy.
We might have to take a class one of these days.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind taking a class how to make good
cold press?
No. A cold brew cold coffee. Cold brew coffee. So, I'll bring this. I'll kind of forge in. You can give the name of the movie. But the reason why, not because of the flavor this time. Usually we have the flavor that connects it to the movie.
Right.
It's the ideal that you normally wouldn't go into, a grocery store to go get decaf coffee. You normally wouldn't. But if somebody gave this to you and you tasted it, you'll come back for more.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like this next movie, the movie that we're talking about tonight. because it was a total box office flop. I mean, it flopped like a fish out of water. So much. But when people actually went and saw it, actually got to see the movie, it became what you call a cult classic. Mm-hmm. And it has, of course, prevailed beyond a cult classic to being probably one of the best sci-fi movies ever made, which then helped to spawn new generations of sci-fi movies.
Yeah.
But it's also been labeled as one of the AMC's top 100 movies of all time.
So let's take our listeners back to 1982, to Blade Runner, directed by Ridley Scott, based off of a novel.
Correct.
And there were two other people, different people that wrote the screenplay. I really liked how in the opening scene or opening credits was an explanation of what the time frame was,
what was going on.
Yeah.
The replicants, which are androids.
Mm-hmm. But in the novel, they're considered
Andes, which is short for android.
And the environment that we're getting ready to go into, and what's even been done.
Yeah, it's 2049. I think it's it's set in I just had my notes. I forgot when it was. It's futuristic. I think 2024. And this is set in that time frame where the Terrell company had been making replicants, and the replicants have become to a point where they have become so powerful
and so human like.
So human like that they decided to basically dominate the world, which then they banished them from Earth to work on foreign planets, to like minerals and stuff like that. And what you'll see is that they were banned from the Earth, but anything that tried to make it to Earth, they would have what you call Blade Runners, cops of special force, who would track down and what they call not terminate, but retire. No. Now, I'll put you into perspective. When people thought of replicants, they thought of them as bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, because look what happened on the other, I believe it's the other planet. There was a mutiny, a bloody mutiny. Yeah. People got killed.
By the replicants.
Yeah.
And so then you end labeling all replicants as evil. So this is where I think me and you have had this conversation. Where for a sci-fi to be good, it has to go up beyond, it has to have a human element to it, something mm-hmm. that you can totally relate to.
And that does not mean that the creature or the alien has to take on human qualities in a human form. And there's a movie, it's not considered a classic, but
Annihilation
is a good example of that.
Well, in this sense, it does take on human qualities, just not the human qualities you expect.
Yeah.
And it can be the struggle, their journey that they go through, that it's human-like. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
So, I'm getting ready to sneeze. But that's why I say it has to have a human element. And this movie has a very human element. Besides, you have humans in it. It's the replicants that actually express more of a human side than which you wouldn't expect it. Because the movie synopsis off these six replicants who got loose, destroyed a ship, or killed a bunch of people on the ship, and they got loose. And they hired the company, I think the police force comes in and gets Harrison Ford's character, mm-hmm. which he's a former Blade Runner, and they hire him to go.
They coax him to come back.
Yeah, they coax him to come back.
You find out that he, in a way, he wasn't really doing much of that kind of work.
Yeah, you don't know why he stopped. Mm-hmm. You don't know.
Oh, and real quick, so the story actually is set in Los Angeles in November 2019. So we're not even there yet.
No, we're not. what was interesting is that he's coaxed out. And of course, you find out the storyline. Because the movie starts off with one replicant that you see this, they're questioning, and then he kills the person who's questioning him. And you find that is a replicant. They use this, the Blade Runners use this questioning method, which they look at the pupils of the eyes, determine who's a human and who's not a human. It's how they can figure them out.
They also don't show emotion.
They do show emotion, but through the eye, you can tell if it's a real emotion or not.
Yeah. And I guess, I'm trying to understand, were they designed not to show...
No, they were designed to be like humans, as much as possible. And Tyrell, the creator, was trying to, each line, the Nexus 6, at this point, is the most advanced replicant.
Okay.
So each line, just like you have your cell phones, like anything, they're always trying to improve upon it. So his idea with the improve upon that was to give them memories, memories to feelings, to try to make it more human. And I get where he was coming from with it, because he was trying to make them accepted by others. But it was one thing that was interesting, though, that we noticed that you've seen the storyline that is the replicants, because of the mutiny that happened on our planet, were giving a shelf a lifespan of 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you find out is that a lot of the replicants didn't know they were replicants.
Yeah.
They thought they were humans.
Mm-hmm.
And you find these four, as this story goes along, is you find them asking, when is my creation date?
That are illegally on Earth.
Yeah, illegally. And they're asking the question, what is my
inception
date? And when do I die? This word die keeps coming up. Because they must have found that they have a shelf life, in a sense. So they've killed people. They see it. You see this whole, you know, Harrison Ford's character tracking down, which is interesting. If you watch this film from today's perspective, you look at the graphics, you're like, what in the world were they thinking? But if you're back in 1982, you're like, oh my gosh, this is freaking amazing.
This is revolutionary.
I've never seen anything like this. And yeah, I believe, yeah.
There was something, it's interesting, like some of the scenes with the flying cars, it looked different as opposed to like some of the buildings. And you had mentioned how some of the buildings were actually models.
Yeah, hand-built models. Like they did in Star Wars and stuff. Yeah, I mean, this movie was really awesome, though. And you really get into it because you have Rick Decker, who's played by Harrison Ford. He does a marvelous job. And you never, through the story, find out what made him quit.
Yeah.
Maybe stop, but you realize that he sees replicants as bad. They're no good for society, until this woman, which is a replicant, who he exposes to her that she's a replicant, which kind of shatters her whole thinking, because mm-hmm. she has these memories, and they're actually memories of Tyrell's niece.
She even has pictures.
Yeah.
that come along with her.
Well, they're given to her probably by Tyrell.
Yeah.
Like they all do. And she saves his life. And that begins to change how he begins to see them.
Yeah.
And now, there's stuff that goes through this, his journey, but he begins to see something different. Totally different. Where that night that he, after she killed the replicant, she goes, well, now she's a fugitive herself. A replicant fugitive. And she asked him the question, will you, if I go to the North Country, will you come and hunt me? And he says, no. Yeah. And she goes, will they? He goes, yes. So now you think about it, he's pretty ruthless. He's probably the best of the best of Blade Runners. And his mind's starting to change how he sees her. And I think that in a lot of ways is how this story plays a lot into society. Is that we end up seeing people, a group of people, and they might have done something wrong, but then we label them all to be that way.
Mm.
And kind of like Rick Decker, our minds need to be changed on how we see them. Because his mind begins to...
People.
Yeah, because even his ultimate, like, battle with the last one, the guy wasn't even trying to kill him in the way. He was, in the way, trying to show him what his deepest fear was, which was the replicant's own deepest fear, which was death. Dying. Yeah. He wanted more life. Now, isn't that something that me and you all struggle with?
Yeah.
Death. And he was struggling with that.
How much time... we have this fear. We respond and react out of fear because we believe we don't have enough time to correct. Do certain things, and to experience certain things.
Yeah. And that's what they were doing. Unfortunately, they killed people in the process. But the whole like epic battle was actually the replica drawing out Deckard's fear of who? The replicants. He was chasing him, but not chasing him. Because at any point, he could have got him and killed him. I mean, he had him. He grabbed him by his gun, had him, could have killed him, but he didn't. Into the point where they jump across the building, Deckard's getting ready to slip off, and the replicant reaches down and saves his life and picks him up. And places him down, then sits in front of him. To show him what your fear is. He goes, whoever has fear is a slave to that fear. Mm-hmm. And the way he was exposed in Deckard's racism, he was a slave to that fear of replicants, which not all replicants were bad.
Yeah.
And if you understood their story, why they were trying to do what they were doing, you will have sympathy, compassion. You will go, you're not going about the right way. But you fear death. You want more time.
Yeah. But he had an assignment, you know.
Who, Deckard?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
So, in a way.
You struggle.
Yeah. What could he have really done differently?
Well, we'll look at the end, though. End of the film is that he has an assignment, too, to kill that woman. They were never to bring the replicants in. They were always to kill the replicants. Well, the girl...
Press
is a replicant who's now been deemed to be on the loose. Who he's also been assigned to take down. And he doesn't. He actually escapes with her. Because the classic line is, too bad she has to die. I think that's what it is. Remember? The police officers, he goes... Too bad she has to die. And which was a reference to her. And he freaks out. And he runs home and grabs her, gets her dressed, and they take off and go to the elevator. And it goes right to black. As the door shut, it goes to black. And he,
right.
And you never see what happens until you see Blade Runner 2049. And you kind of go from there, which, you know, hey, if you haven't seen the movie yet, then spoilers, they have a baby. But let's keep moving.
Yeah, we like to give away a lot.
Yeah, if I could, I would give Avengers Endgame all their plots and details right now.
But we don't want Marvel coming at us.
Hey, it's only been a week now. Have you ever seen a movie? Get out there and go see it.
But, and I really like Blade Runner 2049.
It was good. Slow pace, though. A little too slow for me, but it was good, though.
Yeah.
The visuals were just stunning.
Yeah.
That's why I won Best Cinematography. But, did you know this film was nominated for two Oscars?
And what were those Oscars, sir?
I don't know. I got to get past my notes here because I know that. Best art direction and best effects. Visual effects.
Okay.
It did not win.
Like you said, it was a box office flop.
It was a total box office flop. But that's okay.
It grossed $27 million in the U.S.
Did you know the number one movie ranked movie all time was also a box office flop?
Jaws.
No.
Oh my gosh.
Jaws was a
top notch. That was a blockbuster. What am I doing? It's too hot. I can't even think straight right now.
Citizen Kane, which one day we will do.
Oh my, I can't believe I said that. Which
was a box office flop too.
Please forgive me, y'all. Please don't write us any hate mail.
We will.
Yeah. Definitely one. I had to watch it again. I had to watch Blade Runner again because it was a while since we watched it the first time together. But I enjoyed it. Like it was nice to see kind of saw things a little differently. And understanding more of... It's like I kind of saw the replicants more as human.
Yeah. They acted more human than your main character, though. For the most part. And that wasn't a bad thing. That wasn't actually intended in the story. It's a great story. It's not all about visual effects. It's about story. Which any sci-fi movie, if it's not story dominant, then it might look good, but it's hollow. It's like one of those Easter bunnies. Chocolate Easter bunnies. Hollow as I don't know what.
Looks
great on the outside. It's hollow as...
Well, like, it was in the 80s, so, I mean, they can only do so much. But yeah, definitely, I wanted to share some cool facts, you know, like, to share. What's one that y'all would like? There were... So, and this, actually, a little fun fact, for those who didn't watch Alien, was based on the same kind of universe. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So, same type of universe in Alien, in Blade Runner.
Yeah, did you know that Arnold Schwarzenegger was considered to play Rick Deckard, which went to Harrison Ford? 2 years later, Arnold starred in Terminator.
Oh, wow. So, yep. No, I did not know that.
Yep. That's amazing, Goose.
Oh, check this out.
Go ahead.
Listen to this. For many aerial shots of the city, all kinds of material were used to simulate, buildings in the city landscape, such as miniature spaceships from other science fiction movies, an upright model of the Millennium Falcon from...
Star Wars.
Yes. Can be seen, this is episode 4, A New Hope, in 1977, can be seen with some difficulty to the left of the police building.
All right, I got ready for you. Ridley Scott regards Blade Runner as probably his most personal and complete film. Think about all the films he's done for like 4 years. This is the most complete film. And get this. The novel hints at, is Deckard a replicant? Problem by having Deckard casually mention that one indicator of an android is a lack of sympathy for other androids. His interlocutor then points out that given his job, that means that Deckard could be one too. But you notice that that's kind of in the way. He didn't have much sympathy either. You think about how his character is. He lacks sympathy for pretty much anybody. But you notice that's something he got. With the girl. The girl replicant, Pris. Mm-hmm. Oh, because his mind started to change on how he saw these replicants and stuff. I like this. The final scene was shot literally hours before the producers were due to take creative control away from Ridley Scott.
Yeah, that's there was cool. There were some issues.
Yeah.
On set, and Ridley Scott was frustrated with some stuff.
And all for your potheads, the snake scale scene under the electronic microscope was actually a marijuana bud. Yeah, I kind of saw that too, but that's kind of cool. I don't know weed, so just saying. One more, baby. Hit us with one more, please.
Well, Ridley Scott considers it a favorite movie of his own.
Cool. Well, we ask that you know, this is definitely a movie you need to go watch. Not just watch one time, watch many times over, because it's like, I love the film because it has some quiet moments to it. There's not a lot of explanation. We have to go in dialogue to explain everything. A lot of the explanation is done by just visual. Yeah. The character reacting to something, to not reacting to something.
Yeah.
And a lot of the story is driven that way. Which I love films that do that. The storytelling is multidimensional.
Even though time is a factor in this film and even a theme, you don't feel like when you're watching it, and even how the characters are operating, I guess. You don't feel like it's rushed. And that, in a way, that time is, like, they have, like 48 hours to get this figured out. So, you know, Rick has, so he's just out there just searching.
They don't know.
Yeah.
And you don't know that until really you find the end when the one android die, or the replicant dies from his life expectancy. You realize that time was the essence for them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, another thing, I mentioned this before we had started recording, but anyways, one of the things about futuristic sci-fi films is you don't see, so this one is gritty. It looks gritty.
It's very gritty.
It looks dirty in a good way.
Yeah.
Like, and I love that it's set in the future. And it, even with that, it was relatable. And it made you feel like kind of the world you live in today. Like, you can kind of see that.
Yeah.
So I love that. I like movies with grit. I like movies with dirt in it. I don't like everything looking, you know, so clean and pristine and typical. And you're fanning yourself because you're like, our listeners are probably like, why didn't you just turn the fan on? Because that would ruin the audio.
What you do for a podcast.
Yeah. And what we do for y'all.
Yes.
You better be grateful.
So, with that, still popcorn. We don't give a heck if it's hot outside. Brew yourself a nice hot cup of coffee. Don't worry, we will have a cold brew blend for you too in the future, so you can drink in this movie in this upcoming hot summer season.
Wouldn't it be awesome if we had our own coffee line?
Oh, that'd be great.
Maybe,
but not
maybe
today.
In the future. But hey, tune in every Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We release new episodes. But thank you so much for listening, and hope you come back soon. Thank you so much for listening to Coffee and Classic Movies. We hope you can join us next Saturday. We like to drop new episodes at 10 a.m. Don't forget to subscribe and share with your friends and family. Until next time.